to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
Hey friends, welcome to Shift Drink on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. I'm Matthew Ramsey, burger consultant, caffeine junkie, and bottomless pit of ice cream. Joined by...
I'm Eddie Kim. Proud DCist. Also hat-wearing idiot.
Idiot.
And we're both wearing stupid hats right now. Jeff is not, so... You are very much normal looking.
I still like my hat.
Well, every week we are... what the hell are we doing? Every week we are joined...
by some kind of local industry pro. Brewers, bakers, bartenders. And this week, professional wino. We have Mr. Jeff Siegel from the newly minted Domestique Wine. Welcome.
Thanks, guys. Good to be here. I wish you had given me the hat memo.
Yeah.
to wear a dumb hat.
Every week, Eddie picks one piece of fashion or clothing on me and decides to pick on it.
Yeah.
Got it.
Last week, it was the neckerchief.
Well, I mean, you got rid of the mustache, so.
The mustache is back, bro.
I mean, it's getting there, but.
Nah, it's we're talking full glory. I have a mustache comb and everything.
It's just growing past the edges of your mouth.
Yeah, I don't like it. Ugh.
I've got that right now too. It's hard, you know. You
I don't like it when it yeah when yeah, it goes
get
over
it
the
under
lip.
Your lips. Ugh. It's not so easy.
No, I don't like that. But anyways, back to you, Jeff.
Thanks, well, before we get in a little bit deeper about Jeff and his new wine shop, should we just talk about a little bit of what's been going on this week?
Yeah, a little weekend recap.
Yeah. You have a little thing about Amy Poehler.
But yeah, she I think it's very apropos. She's also opening a wine store up in Park Slope, so no competition, Jeff. I guess her thing is kind of featuring $13 and under bottles from all over the place.
Mm-hmm. The DC Craft Cocktail Bartenders Guild just celebrated their repeal day ball this Saturday, celebrating.
I'm guessing some of you listeners are probably still a little hungover.
We just ran into two bartenders sitting at the Brothers and Sisters bar. They're still hungover.
Yeah.
So if anyone wants to try to get a decent cocktail this week in D.C., it's going to be very sloppily.
Yeah,
made.
Good luck. Sonic is upping their Happy Meal game. Apparently, three employees at a Sonic drive-in in Texas were arrested after an ecstasy pill was discovered tucked into a four-year-old's burger wrapper. I guess the mom only discovered after, like, the kid wanted to initiate a massage train and, I don't know, blast some EDM.
You would choose this news point. This is one of my favorite stories. The joy of cooking has been vindicated. A journal has retracted two more of Brian Wasink. He's a professor up at Cornell around the time that I actually went there. He retracted two of his papers, one of them saying that the joy of cooking over the years with its various reprints has been increasing in the number of calories for the recipes, which is, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, Irma Rombauer's is rolling over in her grave. But
But
now the papers have been retracted. Irma's been vindicated, and we can...
Calorie count
We can
intact.
Use The Joy of Cooking without guilt.
It's a pretty important book, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, my wife makes pancakes a lot. The pancake recipe still, she's made it probably, you know, 100 times every single time, Joy of Cooking. I don't know if they've gotten more calories in them or not, but...
Every single time she makes it, it's just a little bit more calories.
A little bit
a little bit more salt as we smoke a little bit more and lose more of our taste buds.
Locally, Tail Up Goat started doing brunch. So that was we were on week two, which was really fun. Also, Chrissy Teigen came under fire from the Twitterverse for making kimchi with her bare hands.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
I did not see this.
Yeah. Apparently, they have no problem with her eating a burger bare-breasted, but eating kimchi with bare hands was a no-no.
I assume like every Korean mother and grandmother. And,
well, David Chang did come to her defense. Yeah, and I think he said he made it with his feet. So,
I mean, yeah, that's how you're supposed to make it.
Yeah,
yeah. And I just brought back a jar of my mom's kimchi, and we tasted it last night.
Did she make it with her feet?
She made it with her tears of disappointment for me.
She's going to be more disappointed when she hears this podcast.
Yeah, I've grown up to be a podcaster. worse than being a criminal.
All right, let's start drinking.
Yes.
Let's pour some things. Jeff, you actually brought your own shift drink today.
I did. I didn't know what you guys were going to serve, and I didn't want it to be crappy. So
that's totally fair.
I brought my own. So what we have here is a bottle we just got in 2 days ago. It's a Pet Nat. I'm sure awesome. You guys are familiar with Pet Nat. It's all the...
Pet Nat's so hot right now.
Yeah, it's so hot right now. So this is a Pet Nat from Marie Thibault in the Loire Valley, and it's made from 100% Gamay from old vines. So 50-year-old vines,
okay.
At least 50, maybe 60-year-old vines. I was there this summer. They're really gnarly vines.
Cool.
It's awesome. Awesome Pet Nat. Good for a little afternoon drink.
Mm-hmm. While you pour this out, Pet Nat.
Oh,
pop quiz. Do you know what Pet Nat is, Matthew?
Petillant Natural.
Cool.
Ancestral method. This means it's basically getting fermented in the bottle, right?
That's correct. So you take wine that has not yet finished fermenting, and you bottle it and then allow it to finish fermenting in the bottle. So what you get is a sparkling wine that has less aggressive bubbles in a champagne, less atmospheric pressure. So it tends to be a little lower alcohol. It's got a less aggressive fizz to it. Really nice, easy drinking wines.
Yeah.
They're really hard to make. I mean, I think the thing is that there are a lot of Pet Nats in the market that are pretty bad. It's not an easy wine to make, to take a unfermented wine, arrest the fermentation, bottle it, and then get something on the other end of it that's really good.
Yeah.
So that you see a lot of cloudy, you know, pretty messed up Pet Nat.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think that's probably like where some of the traction is too, right? Because like if you're doing this well, you're like probably at the top of your game.
Definitely. I mean, you can, you know, on the nose of this, this is just like straight up strawberry candy. It's not sweet. It's totally dry wine.
No, it's totally dry, but yeah, I get that. That's really fun. Not like a pretty good like giveaway that it's a Pet Nat is the fact that it's usually capped, right?
Typically, you'll see them with a crown cap or like a beer cap on it. This one had a cork in it. The pressure in Pet Nats can vary, but for the most part, you're seeing them with crown caps on them.
Having a wine shop that's dedicated purely to natural wine, do you get? I mean, bottles just kind of popping off here and there every once in a while?
I've seen it happen before.
Yeah.
It hasn't happened yet in our 3 weeks of business at the moment. We have not had that happen. It wouldn't be the first time I've seen it. Typically, the more dangerous thing is someone who starts unwrapping a champagne or higher pressure bottle and isn't holding the cork firm enough, and then you get a flying cork ricocheting off glasses.
This is really good.
Actually, a quick question. You might know this. I know there's a restaurant that's about to celebrate a big anniversary, and they're trying to get a 9-liter bottle of champagne and savor it. Is that recommended?
I would recommend it for the spectacle of it, and if they can find somebody who can savor a 9-liter bottle of champagne solo, I think I will be very happy for them.
I think Eddie's up to the challenge.
No, yeah.
Maybe like 5 or 6 people could do it. I'd like to see it. I'll support it, yes.
You support it. Wow.
I support it.
Okay. I just want to see the video, so I'm going to support it too. I want to see it in slow motion.
That was pretty, oh God.
Now, I mean, what is this? This is your shift drink. Is this? I imagine you're probably kind of tasting throughout the day.
Yes, it's a lot of tasting throughout the day. My shift drink is typically not wine.
Yeah.
You know, to be honest, it's after a long day tasting wine, I tend to like a really cold beer and some type of Amaro, maybe Fernet from my San Francisco days or Braulio. But if I am drinking wine at the end of a shift, it's probably going to be something like a Pet Nat.
Yeah.
But yes, a lot of tasting is involved in the process. Actually, I went to the dentist this morning, and I haven't been to the dentist since Domestique opened,
Yeah.
which has not been that long. So hopefully I haven't been to the dentist since then.
Yeah.
And the dentist was like, your teeth look a little more worn than last time. Has anything, you know, been different in your life? And I'm like, yeah, I've been tasting thousands of wines for the past, you know, couple months to get ready for this.
That's amazing. Yeah. I didn't even think about the wear and tear it does on your teeth, but it makes sense.
What kind of beer would you normally drink? Is there anything that's on hand?
Yeah, we carry a handful of beers at the shop. They tend to be from France. I guess I'd say our go-to is called Loire Etche from the Loire Valley. It's, you know, beer that all of our natural winemakers like to drink. We drink it when we're there. It's really crushable, you know, sort of Belgian table style beer, but yeah. From France.
Cool.
We have beer that we always like to bring down from New York from Folks Beer, who's making really awesome beer up in Brooklyn and Carroll Gardens. They've got a great lager, but honestly, if it's, I could sort of drink anything at the end of a shift. You know, if you give me a 33-degree Modelo, I'll be super happy.
Oh, yeah, warm beer. Well, I'm actually sitting in between two former San Franciscans, and I wanted to mention your weird obsession with Fernet. It's delicious, but...
Yeah.
What's the matter with you people?
I don't know. It's like one of those things, if you don't like it, you eventually will, you know? That's what I just like... There's people very often when they're having like their first Fernet, it's like can be like this visceral.
But you guys took it way too far, or maybe very, very far. I wouldn't say way too far.
I disagree. I think part of the reason you like it is because it's like it's a form of punishment for everybody else, right?
I mean, I remember walking down the Mission early one morning, about to catch my flight home, and I didn't see beer cans and stuff on the ground. I saw bottles of Fernet.
Welcome to San Francisco.
Yeah. What you didn't see is the gingerbacks, because those are, I think that's how you like ease into it. You have something that's like maybe a little harsh, and then you have this delicious cold gingerback,
a ginger ale back.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's how you drink it. Fernet, gingerback.
Sounds nice.
Yeah.
Or you just go full San Francisco and you just have Fernet, only Fernet, and then a Mission hot dog.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah. Speaking of Mission hot dog.
Oh my God. Okay. Well, we can break it out.
Yeah. I thought we were pairing.
I was in Shirlington, which is on the southern part of Arlington, earlier today. And we all like to talk about like who has the best half smoke in the city. And I'm going to be honest, the best half smoke, well, we're big fans. I am wearing a Meats and Food sweatshirt, yeah, so I have to give
vote.
A big shout out to them for the best half smoke in the city. But they're kind of one of the best OG half smokes, like even before Meats and Foods opened, I'm gonna have to say is the Weenie Beanie.
Beanie Weenie.
Shirlington.
I mean, they invented the half smoke. They're the OG half smoke.
Are they?
Yeah.
They invented the half smoke.
Well, so the half smoke has gone through many iterations. Ben's was the first to actually put chili on the half smoke. But yeah, Beanie Weenie is the half smoke. Weenie Beanie.
Okay. It's a little cold. It's a little mashed up, but...
And their whole thing, why they call it the half smoke is because they literally cut it in half and then smash fry it.
And smash fry it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. So I had a breakfast sandwich earlier with a half smoke, but this is the dog with the works, which looks like it's chili, mustard, and onions.
And as we all know, eating on the radio is always
delicious.
Idea.
Makes all the mashing sounds you can get.
It's going to pair perfectly with this wine.
Yeah.
We're going to put you to the test, and it's like, what would you pair with this?
With the wine or with the half smoke?
With the half smoke.
With the half smoke. So I would
call it cold half smoke.
Let me taste it first. Let's see. I got to taste this first.
This is disgusting.
It's pretty cold. How old is this half smoke?
I got it this morning. It's been sitting in my car, though.
Wow. Definitely cold.
Not a flattering photo I'm taking of you.
Flavors here.
Anyway, when it's warm, it's delicious. The Beanie Weenie, it's... It's basically kind of like your truck stop dining situation.
No, but it's awesome. It's an institution. It's been around since the 50s.
Any notes? A little spice?
The half smoke I get a little... The relish is pretty overpowering at the moment. Given the temperature of the hot dog, I'm really getting that. I get a little spice on the back end. There's a little spice on the finish there.
You get that snap?
Yep, the snap.
That might just be... Just like old hot dog.
No, the snap is important.
You know, I'm getting the snap.
No, you gotta have the snap.
I think it's a pretty good hot dog, and I don't mind that it's a little colder and more snappy. I'd say if I were gonna pick a wine to pair with this, I think this Pet Nat's a pretty good pairing, but I probably want to bring in a red with a little bit of funk to it to go against all the funk I'm getting out of this slightly older hot dog at the moment. I'd probably stay in the Loire Valley. So honestly, same producer, Marie Thibault, this winemaker makes a wine that a red I would do with this. If I could go grab it now.
All right.
Awesome.
All right. Well, before we kind of cut to things, we do like to play a little game we call Two Truths, One Lie.
Two Truths, One Lie.
All right. In between bites of your half smoke, lay it on us.
Okay. Well, I'm going to do this all on the spot. Haven't thought about this at all yet. You put the first one in my head a minute ago. So
nice.
I've sabered a number of bottles of champagne in my life with various implements, one time including an American Express black card.
Wow. Okay.
Okay.
Sorry. Yeah. My mouth's full.
I can see that
dog
as being doable. Just to let everyone know, I actually did not take a bite of my hot dog.
What?
Just to laugh at you guys to eating yours.
I like it.
I can't stop.
Next, we'll go San Francisco. That was the other topic that put something in my head. Mm-hmm. When I opened my wine bar in San Francisco, the first place I opened, I was 24 years old at the time, but I told all the interviewers writing about us that I was 25 because I thought it would make me sound more legit and responsible. Big difference in that 1 year right there, 24 to 25.
Yeah.
And then lastly, random one. On the night of my wedding, my new wife and I got stuck in an elevator in the Bowery Hotel in New York for an hour and a half because a very drunk girl pushed all the buttons in the elevator, and the elevator got stuck for 90 minutes, and then finally we were rescued by John Stamos.
Oh, come on, John Stamos!
Fuck you.
Being
rescued by a Greek god.
Yeah.
He is Greek, right? Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he's famous. Also, he played for the Beach Boys. Bongos, man.
I'm going to say...
I want the Stamos one to be true, so I'm just going to leave that.
I'm going to say the San Francisco one is false.
Okay.
Because I have read... We did research on you, so... I think I did read an article saying that you were 24. I don't know.
Kitchenette, right?
Yeah.
Kitchenette?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, being young and brash is a positive thing in San Francisco.
I think you were just 24.
You did not lie about your age.
You guys are wrong. I have not. The Stamos thing is true.
It is. Nice.
Yep, that's true. I have not sabered a bottle of champagne with an MX Black Card before. We talked about if that could work or not, and I think there are credit cards that are heavy enough that you could do it. And I do think it'd be possible, but I haven't yet found someone who would give me their MX Black Card to try that with.
Yeah, I don't know if any of my friends have that.
But I did lie about my age to the Wall Street Journal when I was 24 years old and wanted to appear older and more responsible as a 25-year-old. And John Stamos did rescue me from an elevator.
That's amazing.
Wow.
I think the other move is to, like, grow a beard, right? That's just like, yeah, he's older. Let's see.
Glasses.
So you had a wine shop out in, this is San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
What area?
It was on Valencia Street in the Mission District.
Ah, okay.
So you know where Beretta is?
Yeah.
A block south of Beretta.
Okay.
On 24th in Valencia.
That's amazing. That was my hood.
Can I read a quote from one of your interviews about what you did at that
line? Who wrote the interview?
It was Grub Street.
Go for it.
Why okay. not? I drink everything out of mason jars at home. Just the other day in here, I poured a 1990 Ridge into mason jars. The glass doesn't really change the experience of the wine. It just adds this sort of middle-class, aspirational, upwardly mobile sensibility to the whole thing. And it's more European this way. I'm going to stop right there.
First of all, any Camier impersonation is not spot on.
24 and an unsufferable asshole.
So you've moved on. You've moved on from mason jars.
I have. We did do that at my wine bar in San Francisco, and it was a big controversial thing. I can stand behind it at the time. I have definitely moved on from that. That was 2010 or so, and I've had some time to.
But I think the intent was like, I think it was good intentions behind that idea, right? From what I read, it was like you're kind of just trying to break down the pretensions of
this is
of
8 years
culture.
Ago. So think of the wine world 8 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it was me coming into wine. I grew up in a family that drinks a lot of wine. I grew up around wine. I hated how, pretentious, I guess, exactly, wine always seemed. But I really fell in love with wine. So I wanted to create a place where young people would want to drink wine.
Yeah.
And that felt like I wanted it to be like a house party. I wanted it to be a place my friends would hang out and, you know, people who drank beer and cocktails typically would want to drink really cool, great wine. That was already happening, obviously, in places around the world. It just wasn't really happening in the U.S. a whole lot.
Yeah.
And I think the shortcut that we took to getting there was by picking on the glass. And, a bit of it was a middle finger. It was like to all the people who wanted to come in and drink there who wanted glasses, it was sort of like, this is how we do it, and you're going to live with it, where you're going to drink this wine in a mason jar. And
so
there were
punk
people who didn't want it. Yes, we thought we were very punk, yes.
I mean, I assume the proximity to being into wine country was also another middle finger, the other middle finger.
Yes, I mean, and we served mostly European wine. Most of the wine, mm-hmm, as the same as that Domestique, was French, mm-hmm, or Italian. Those were the wine areas I knew better. They were the wines that spoke to me. We sold more California wine over time as I got to know winemakers and spend time with them and meet people who made wine in the area that I loved. But those were our dual middle fingers, I guess. On one hand, it was the mason jar. And on the other hand, it was the, you know, no, we don't have 20 California wines here.
Yeah.
And I think the mason jar, I do stand behind what the purpose of it was, but it, you know, it was a little self-serving. Honestly, part of the idea in doing Domestique the way we are doing it was also just removing us, you know, people like me and my partners from the equation a little bit and not making it as much about us, whereas at the time that was a move that was a lot about me.
Obviously. Sure.
I mean, let's talk about Domestique. It's been coined as kind of DC's first major natural wine bottle shop. So what are you trying to do there?
A number of things. I think the first and the simplest is just provide a place in DC for people to buy and get into natural wine. I noticed it when I moved here about 2 years ago now. I moved down with my wife and my son, and my wife got a job here, so it was sort of an unexpected last-minute move. And when I got here, there wasn't anywhere to buy the kinds of wines that I'd always been buying and drinking. There are great wine shops here all over the place, but there wasn't what, for me, when I was in New York, what I had at Chambers Street in New York or in San Francisco with Buyrite or a handful of other places where I could go and see all the producers I loved and buy their wine. I found myself driving to New York to buy wine here when we moved, and that felt like a missed opportunity.
Yeah.
So that was the core idea, is really to create a place for DC, which is a great food and drinking city already. So many good restaurants and bars to buy and just get into and learn about natural wine. Mm-hmm. And then from beyond that, to do it in a certain way where, and I mean, well, I'm sure we'll get into this, but natural wine is a pretty controversial thing at the moment. And I think our stance on it is a little different. It's honestly, it's almost like the anti-mason jar. We're trying to not be so aggressive about it. We want to make it something that's approachable or acceptable to a lot of wine consumers while remaining true to what natural wine is. And DC seems like an interesting place to do that because you have such a educated, worldly group of people who live here. You know, you have a really like interesting diverse city across food cultures and drinking establishments and the whole thing. There's a lot going on here, and the fact that this was missing, it felt like the right place to do it at the same time.
Yeah.
The wine importation laws here are very favorable too.
There's also that. There's yes, of course there's the fact that DC is very favorable in terms of bringing wine in directly, and that's a big part of our business model as well.
Let's in a busy bar, you have 2 seconds to tell a guest what is natural wine, because that's probably one of the most common questions I've been getting in the past year or two, and I'm sure you have been too.
Yeah,
working at Tail Up Goat, what is it?
In 2 seconds, it's wine that is made with less intervention and without chemicals. The definition, there is no definition, right? So you could make it up on any given night and you'd be right. And that's the problem right now, is that natural wine has not been defined yet. True. So everybody has a different definition, but in the simplest sense of it, it's wine that is made with less chemicals. And as a result of that, also less, you know, hands-on intervention, to allow the wine to be more what it was, you know, kind of originally intended to be.
Right. But what about now we have, but there's natural wine is kind of lumped in together with all these other terms that are associated with biodynamic. You have organic.
You have
low sulfur.
Sulfur.
Don't forget
yeast, native yeast.
Native yeast.
No, but you have to use the voice.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Native yeast.
Okay.
I had one cigarette last night, guys.
You had more than one cigarette, I saw you.
Why should the consumer care about this? Or why, I mean, does it do something special for the wines?
Yeah, there are a lot of reasons. I mean, in all those terms for what you said, our definition, I guess I'll start off. Let me tell you our definition. At Domestique, the definition is really simple. It's that the fruit, the grapes, have to come from an organic or biodynamic vineyard. So they're farmed organically or biodynamically. It has to be fermented with ambient or native yeast in the cellar. And it has to have very minimal, if any, sulfur. And that's our guidelines right there. And every wine that we sell has to fit that. And there are people have other guidelines. There are people who would say that's not enough and people who would say that's crazy, but that's what we do.
Yeah.
In terms of why it's important, I think there are many reasons for that. For us, one that gets glossed over a lot is really simply just the taste of the wine. I think the wines that we love are wines that are made this way. They are more alive and they're more transparent. And what matters the most to us are wines that are transparent, terroir driven, you know, clear wines, real wines. And that's how you make those wines, in our opinion. I think the other reasons that get talked about a lot are really important too, which is it's a lot better for the environment. It's better for the workers who are around these vineyards. It's better for the end consumer. There are a lot of people who don't respond well to sulfites and, you know, I mean, food's been ahead of the game here for a little while, but people don't want all these chemicals in their wines, or they shouldn't want them in their wines.
Right.
So it's better for everyone across the spectrum, from the maker to the consumer. And it's, it's like a return to something that's a little more real and tangible. People want to be able to feel or be connected to the products they consume, and it's a lot easier when it's a wine that is not made with some incredibly fancy chemicals, you know, engineered by a massive company that's doing the same thing with, you know, crackers that you'd find at the grocery store.
Right.
I mean, can we say it's going along the same lines as what happened with the big craft beer movement?
Definitely.
Yeah.
It's different than craft beer. I mean, craft beer went small, and that was really important, and they went more vertical in terms of like the steps of the production process. But natural wine is also its own thing because it's really about additives. I mean, in the end of the day, natural wine comes down to what are you adding into this very natural product that doesn't really need additives to be made.
Sure.
Now, you end up making really crappy wine a lot of the time. I mean, natural wine is very tough to make. I think a lot of the wine that people call natural and drink now is not good wine. It's a lot harder to make natural wine. But it's when it is good, it's a different kind of wine.
And I heard, I mean, that was kind of one of the big fractious points in natural wine, was that, well, you still want to make clean, clear wines in a more natural way, but then some people are making these wines with off flavors. And some people are actually appreciative of those flavors and are drinking them or pushing them on people, saying, it's like, oh, yeah, that Brett taste is supposed to be in there.
Yes, I mean, that's definitely happening right now. There are a lot of flawed, really messed up wines out there that are being sold and people want. And I think it's important to, you know, say that that's not a wrong necessarily. I mean, if somebody likes those wines, there's a place for them. But those aren't really the wines that we sell. We're not fans of Mouse or excessive VA or Brett. I mean, you know, beyond a certain amount, very little. I don't think natural wine has to be flawed. And there's this expectation in the market now, or in the wine world and the food world, that natural wine, flawed wines are good because they're alive. The flaws are a sign that they're alive.
Right, right, right.
And I don't think that people would accept that in their food. And I think for some reason it's okay in wine. Hey, it tastes re-fermented and, you know, horrible, but it's good because it's living. And I think that natural wine is broader than that and has to encompass many styles. And it can't just be wines that taste like nothing else you've ever tasted because there's something wrong with them.
Right.
You use the term mousy, and that's like the second time I've heard that recently. What is mousy?
Mousiness is a chemical reaction in wine that it's unique and it's rare. But you're getting it in a lot of natural wine where you can't often smell it on the wine, but as you finish a wine and the wine interacts with your saliva, you get a flavor that can only be described as, you know, like smelling the cage of a pet mouse.
Yeah.
It's for me, it's also like peanut shells at times. It drives your mouth out, but really, yeah, it just smells like rodent shit.
Yeah,
if you've ever had a mouse or a rat in your house, yeah, or a friend who's weird and keeps a pet rodent, you know that smell.
Oh.
And it permeates the wine and it's disgusting. And there are natural wines, I mean, because wines that don't have any sulfur after a certain amount of time are going to start getting bacterial reactions. And
sure,
that's just the reality of it. And there's a reason sometimes for certain wines to use very minimal sulfur if it can stop something like mousiness. But yes, I mean, mousiness is not perceptible to everybody and not everybody dislikes it. Some people think of it as umami. It's popular in certain places.
We do love our umami here on the show.
Yeah, we do love it. But it, I mean, it sounds like kind of like, I mean, winemaking is, it's a dance, you know, and it's a skill set. And when you're doing the same thing, and you're adding chemicals and these preservatives to make it the standard thing, that's you're missing out on the fact that every season is going to be different. You're not going to get the same grapes. Every element is unique and changes every season. And a good winemaker kind of like plays jazz to make the best product out of that, you know, that harvest.
And that's super important. Every season, every vintage is totally different. And I agree with that. I mean, a good winemaker should use whatever they're getting offered and what they have at their disposal to make a good wine or the best wine they can. And that doesn't mean the same thing every year. And variation in that way is good. Variation is important in natural wine. You want to see variation across bottles and across vintages and across producers, but there's a line in variation and you want it to stay within some norm often, but not everybody agrees with that.
Yeah.
What kind of dancing does natural wine represent to you, Matthew? I have something in mind.
What do you got?
I think it's like twerking.
Oh, wow.
Everyone has their own little style of twerking and they use what they've got.
That's one little subset of the natural wine market. You might be right there. There's like, you know, trap music, like dancing. There's you've got square dancing in natural wine, you know, the more country wine.
Eddie's totally pet twerk.
Yeah.
That's his thing.
Pet twerk.
Well, we're going to step out for a second, take a little break. We're joined by Jeff Siegel of Domestique. You're listening to Shift Drink with Matthew and Eddie.
Just wanting you here next to me. It's been a long time. Don't you agree?
If you're tuned in, you're listening to Shift Drink on Full Service Radio. We'll be right back.
It was all right. We just let it slip away. Hold on and
All right, welcome back. You're listening to Shift Drink on Full Service Radio. I'm here with Matthew, and I'm here with Jason Siegel of Domestique Wines.
That's not my name. That's a famous person, but not me.
Oh, Jeff. I'm sorry, Jeff. I am all of sorts today. Jeff Siegel. Jason is a terrible actor, by the way. But
is he?
I don't like him as an actor.
He's okay. He's okay.
I'm learning things.
We actually learned that you have been eating a lot of chili lately in addition to today, so I'm sorry.
It's okay. Meats and Foods is a few blocks from Domestique, yeah. And I've learned that the chilito is one of the best foods in D.C., if not so anywhere, good. And I've been eating a lot of them.
But you discovered that you have to let it rest a little bit.
Yes, right? Definitely. The first time I had it, I thought it was amazing, and then I've since learned that a warm one is not, it's just not very good. I was eating it the other night at home, and my wife was like, what are you eating? But if you let it sit for 5 or 6 hours and come together a little bit.
It's like a fine wine.
Exactly.
You got to let it age. but you guys are also doing, I mean, you're not only doing wine over there. You guys also have some like pretty cool spirits that also kind of subscribe to the same kind of philosophy.
Yep, we're doing a lot of spirits, beer, cider. We're trying to, you know, break into sake at some point as we learn more about it. It's not an area I know super well, but we do have a fair amount of spirits. And where possible, we're trying to stick to as much of the philosophy as you can, recognizing that every product is a little different.
Mm-hmm. I mean, can I highlight one item on your one Please spirit do. That you have? The Koji fermented spirit.
Yes.
From Empirical Spirits in Copenhagen. I'm glad you mentioned sake. It's pretty crazy when you read the descriptions on the product.
Eddie couldn't even wrap his mind around
it. I could not wrap my mind. Okay.
Nobody can. Everybody comes in and they look at the Empirical Spirits. The bottles are beautiful. The names are super cool. Amazing and entertaining. And they ask, what is this? Is it gin? Is it vodka? Is it tequila? And there isn't really an answer. Yeah. There's not. It can't be classified. They're stuff.
Eddie, what does it say?
Here's one called Fallen Pony Blend. There's one called Fuck Trump and a Stupid Fucking Wall, but there's one called Fallen Pony Blend, and it's described as a quince tea spirit built on barley koji, Belgian saison yeast, and Pilsner malt. The spent quince is used to ferment a quince kombucha, vacuum distilled, and rectify the spirit to its final ABV of 35%. That is pretty much hitting every single like hot term these days when it comes to alcohol and spirits.
Yeah, it didn't say natural in there, but otherwise pretty much.
Yeah. Whole lot of quince.
A lot of quince.
No, that's awesome though. You guys have only been open 3 weeks.
Yes.
How are things going over there?
They're great. It's been busy. We opened up right before Thanksgiving and got a nice little Thanksgiving rush of people who needed things to feed their families or, you know, at least themselves to get through Thanksgiving.
Right. Get in the holiday spirit.
Exactly. And now we've got, you know, the run up to Christmas and New Year's, and we've got a great response from the neighborhood, which is great, or all the neighborhoods around us. But also people have driven in from, you know, all over the place to come and see what we're doing. And I think that's really cool to see people who heard about us or read about us or so on and them making the trek over.
Well, it sounds like once people start driving down from New York, you'll know you've made it.
Yes. Once people come down from New York, we've had a few so far, but they may have just been visiting their families. Right. But yes, we have had some New York treks.
You have a pretty tight crew over there. It's a very small staff. It's you, Rebecca, Eric.
Yes, we just hired one more guy.
One more, okay.
Gus, who came to us. Hey, Gus. He just started last week.
Okay. Do they come to you, or did you have to go out find them? And how is the training process, particularly for kind of this style of wine that has less coverage?
They all came to us in various means. I'll say Eric was the first. He sent me a DM on Instagram well before we were ever hiring. I'd posted a photo of some speakers that we bought, really great speakers, that we found. I went and drove down to Virginia and bought them from some really creepy guy and put them in the shop. And Eric sent me a DM and he was like, these speakers look amazing. I have to work for you. When are you hiring? And then Rebecca early on also, I started talking to her and, you know, about what she wanted to do. And Gus was more recent, but he also had gotten in touch from the beginning. So D.C. is a small city. We had a lot of people reach out to us about potential positions. But we've got a really great team, and I'm super happy to have them. And the training's been, you know, it's training for all of us. I mean, it's no matter who we hired, there was going to be a steep learning curve. Most of our wines are new to DC. They're here for the first time. Mm-hmm. They've never been in this market. So there's a lot of learning around that. I think wine knowledge is important, but is not the most important characteristic for somebody to work in a retail shop. I think it's, you know, really important that, you know, you're good with customers, your customer service is on point, and you have the right energy, and you understand service, period. A lot of people don't think with a service mentality.
Sure.
And I think it's really important that you maintain that mentality all the time. And wine knowledge comes along with that. So there's a base that's important, right. But the people to me is more important.
Also great speakers.
And great speakers.
Yeah.
And great speakers are also. Music is a very important
shelving.
Part of what
we do. Beautiful shelving.
Thank you.
It's a very stark space, but it's actually, it really does feature the wines.
It took a long time to build that shelving, and it's very heavy, so it took some time to install, but yes, we're happy with it.
What kind of music is conducive to natural wine?
We've been going back and forth depending on who's controlling the iPad.
Ambient.
We try not to play a lot of ambient EDM. Music. There's been a little hard EDM. I'd say there's a lot of 80s and early 90s rap, hip-hop. There is French hip-hop as well. We play a lot of jazz. Rebecca likes country music, so Rebecca keeps putting on country when she's there, but I'm not sold yet, depending on who the country artist is. We've gotten pretty into the Chances with Wolves podcast on SoundCloud.
Ooh.
Those are great mixes.
Nice.
And whatever, you know, whatever fits that day. This morning we were playing Dipset.
So, okay. Come for the wine, stay for the music.
We do have like a nice little cozy corner of the shop where I hope you encourage people to hang out a little bit. Nice little carpet on the floor.
Yeah, there's a sitting corner. Right there. That was important. Corner.
Yes.
There are a number of reasons for that. It's a big space. We needed to fill it up in a way. We didn't want it to feel like just a shop, a place you have to go and you can only look at products and spend money. I also just know from experience taking my 3.5-year-old son to wine stores all the time, it's a terrible place to bring a kid, so it's helpful to have an area with comfortable seating and magazines and a little table for that alone. But also beyond kids, people, you know, come in with their partners and they both might not want to stand around looking at wine for half an hour. And it's, you know, it lends a feel to the space. It's a little homier. Obviously, the name's Domestique. There's a connotation of the domestic there. And we want it to feel a bit homier than your traditional doctor's office looking wine store.
Right on.
Yeah. Actually, are you a cyclist? There are a lot of cyclist magazines there.
There are. I am a cyclist. Okay. The origin of the name comes from the cycling world, but there are a couple different meanings for
cool.
it.
Okay.
But in professional cycling, the domestiques are the other riders on a pro team that support the leader. So back in the old days, they would, you know, ride into town and get cigarettes and beer and bring them back to the camp.
Sick.
And they'd give up their bike or their wheels if they had
beautiful.
To. But now, in the modern days, they're also very highly trained, highly paid professionals. They just sacrifice their bodies and their glory to get somebody else across the finish line.
Oh, cool.
That's awesome. That is beautiful.
Yeah, it is nice. Well, let's cut to our next game here. We'll call this one Rapid Fire.
Time for the payback.
Rapid Fire.
So we're just going to kind of ask you a series of questions here and just respond, kind of tip the tongue, first thing that comes to mind.
This is a question that Matthew asked. I heard him ask someone last night. Would you rather spend the rest of your life itchy or sticky?
Sticky.
That's. I think that's a
yeah,
an overwhelming choice.
No one wants to be itchy.
That seems like an easy one.
First celebrity crush.
I think probably Angelina Jolie in that movie where she was super crazy. I forget what the movie was called.
Oh, the where she was in the mental hospital.
Girl Interrupted.
Yes.
Not that
no,
one.
No. They she like breaks out of the. Is that still Girl Interrupted? She like breaks out of a mental.
That's Winona Ryder.
I don't know.
I have no idea. Okay.
I'm mixing up my movies, but something along those lines.
Okay. What's the bottle that turned you onto wines?
It was a bottle of 2004 Alessandra Barbera Leveron is the bottle. It's a slightly sparkling at times Barbera that isn't made every year. I remember drinking it in New York at a place called the Monday Room and pulling out a little napkin, and I don't know, I was 21 or 22 at the time, I think, and I wrote down some weird tasty notes like shit, truffles, dirt, or something. And it was that was what turned me on the natural wine and wine. All of a sudden, I was like, wine can taste amazing and not just like oak and,
yeah,
you know, overripe fruit. And that wine sort of sent me. I went home that night, found Chambers Street's website, bought whatever bottles they had left of it, and then there I went. That was the beginning.
Have you revisited that bottle since?
No, that wine would not be good right
yeah.
now.
Yeah. What was your first job?
My first job was working at Blockbuster.
No way.
As a video clerk.
Nice.
Yes, and it was great.
I love Blockbuster when they came out with all the like imitation movies. They were like imitation Blockbusters of something that big that had just come out, like Transformers, and be like Transformers, and it'd be like a totally like B movie that was like meant to look exactly like Transformers. I also worked at a video store at one point.
Oh.
Did you ever work at a video store?
No, I never worked in a video store.
Ours had a nudie section, though. We
Blockbuster did not.
Blockbusters, yeah. They're like very super Christian.
What is your favorite noodle dish?
My favorite noodle dish? I'd say the ginger scallion noodles from New York Noodle Town. Have you ever been there?
Yeah, those are good.
Best $5 or $6.95 noodles around. But I could eat, you know, I'm pretty into noodles, so.
Guilty grape pleasure.
Guilty grape pleasure?
Yeah.
I don't have many. I'd say that despite my talk about flawed wines, I can enjoy a pretty fucked up natty wine every now and then.
Yeah. Nice.
What should I ask? Favorite bad Brad Pitt movie?
What's the one where he's a tourist in Tibet? And
oh yeah, 7 years in Tibet.
7 years in Tibet.
No one ever says it. That's a great movie.
7 years in Tibet is my favorite Brad Pitt movie.
Nice.
How long were you in Tibet?
I'm sure you've heard Fight Club a lot. So
Fight Club is a good one. I once after that movie came out, I took a picture of him in 7 years in Tibet. I was like, I want that haircut. They didn't give it to me.
Did either. You went to the barber with it?
Yeah, yeah.
And they
didn't
give it to you.
Nah, it was. It wasn't close. Deathbed meal. Sorry, Adikim.
No problem.
I might be weird, but I've thought about this question many, many times. For some reason, I always am trying to imagine what's my deathbed meal. And what I've always come back to is a big bushel of Maryland crabs, a lot of Old Bay, coleslaw,
ooh,
French fries, corn.
You grew up in the area.
I did.
You mentioned that, yes. So you're a local boy. Good.
Yes.
Good for you.
Yes.
I'm always amazed when people are surprised that I ask that question.
Yeah.
They haven't thought about that. So I'm glad that you've...
I think that's the name of a good catering company. And that's all you do is just cater...
That's a great...
People's deathbed meal, yeah.
That's so macabre. But probably would do very well.
Yeah, DBM, bro.
I'm going to ask... We play another game, the last... rapid fire question, a little game called Marry, Fuck, Kill.
Fuck, marry, kill.
Oh, you're going there. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I came. Okay. Since we're talking about natural wines, let's talk about, you went to college and you got a degree in film.
Film.
Okay.
Yes.
Good. So let's talk about supernatural movie monsters.
Okay. Not at all a leap.
Okay. Fuck, marry, kill, Godzilla, Dracula, the original Dracula from the 1930s, or Gremlins, the little what the fuck is the guy's name?
Gizmo, man.
Gizmo.
The honestly, like one of the best Christmas movies of all time, just for the record.
For sure. This one's easy. Kill the Gremlins, fuck old school Dracula, marry Godzilla.
Okay.
Nice.
Okay.
Honey, I'm home. And it's Godzilla's just like, awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us this week.
Of course. This is great.
Our listeners, you can revisit this week's episode or previous episodes on iTunes or wherever the fuck you grab your podcasts, like Spotify. Also, find us on all the social medias as @ShiftDrinkDC.
Don't forget to throw us a review on iTunes, or you know, set up a Yelp page for us. We'll get an intern to do it for us. Actually, next week we're hoping to do a Christmas holiday extravaganza, spectacular with Jason Mader.
Yeah,
and we're actually inviting everyone who industry or non-industry who's ever been touched by Jason Mader or you know has sampled his bread. To stop by and give him a little roast. A little
nice.
Poke.
Yeah. Also, joining Jason Mader, I guess, Bill Murray.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to be discussing his new venture into the world of organic cats and dogs. It's called Pet Nat.
I hate you. All right. Thanks, guys. Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff. Thanks, next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts, covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.